The guitar you're hearing right now belongs to Merle Travis. This is Cannonball Rag.
Cannonball Run, eh?
Cannonball Rag. I tried to hit the post, as they call it in broadcast journalism, where I was talking right up until he started to sing, but he's not going to sing.
No.
No, he's just going to play his guitar.
Mm-hmm. Are you a Cannonball Run fan?
I didn't watch it until as an adult.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
As a kid, I watched it quite a bit.
They were on a lot, and the Roger Moore Bonds were on a lot, and they all merged in together. Mm-hmm. Any sort of movie with like 1970s cars and car wrecks, mm-hmm, I think of as Cannonball Run, even if they're probably not.
I'm surprised they haven't tried to do like a reboot of Cannonball Run. It seems like an easy enough reboot to do.
Fast and the Furious kind of is.
I've never seen a Fast and the Furious
movie. You've never seen any of them?
No, not a one.
So the first one is just like a drag racing movie, and the second one put in a lot of weird special effects for driving around.
What kind of special effects? Like aliens and...
No, there's a race with like 200 cars, and they're all jumping over a bridge, and when you watch it, like, that's fake. There are no cars. That bridge probably wasn't even up. And so that's the sort of fakeness that they then got away from, because what makes the new Fast and the Furious movies popular is that it seems realistic. Like, I mean, it's unrealistic that there is a tank on a highway shooting at cars, but they had a real tank and there were real cars blowing
up. When a new one comes out, do you go see it?
I've never seen one in the theater, but whenever there's an HBO preview weekend, it's the first thing I tape. And it's so much fun. It's so enjoyable.
Really? I never knew you'd be a car guy.
I'm not a car guy at all. I like these old-fashioned big-budget movies where the money is on screen instead of in special effects or computer-generated effects. Mm-hmm. Like, you can see, okay, this costs $150 million. They destroyed about $125 million worth of stuff, and then there's some salaries.
What's the concept of it? What do they do in this? I know that, so they have cars, and they're fast cars.
Yes.
Are they in a race? Like they race across the country?
They used to try to get races involved, but now it's all about the concept of family, where Vin Diesel is the head of this big weird family that's just a bunch of like jewel thieves, because in this world the cops are almost all bad and the good drag racers keep getting arrested by the cops, and there's always like $1 million schemes.
Well, who are they stealing jewels from? People who deserve it.
Yeah, there's always like corrupt cops who are moving huge amounts of merchandise, and then the bad guys our heroes need to steal it from the corrupt cops. Mm-hmm. At one point, this was in Brazil, there was a 10 by 10 by 10 foot safe that was weighed something like, I don't know, 45 tons. And it was then encased in a bank vault with concrete all over the place. And they took like a Volkswagen Jetta and hooked up the trailer hitch to the wall. And they got another Volkswagen Jetta, so they had two of them pulling really hard, and they pull the safe out, which is something you can't do.
No.
No.
Now, when they get this, so they steal these jewels.
Well, they steal the safe, and then they drive through an entire anonymous
city. Carrying a safe around.
Carrying the safe around, but the physics of the safe mean that the safe is, like, sloshing around.
Nothing you're telling me makes me want to see this movie.
Fair enough.
And, all right, but they take these jewels that they steal.
Yeah.
And do they just buy new fast cars with them?
Yeah, part of what you need to accept is that there's just cars everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, they'll get
their everybody in the family have their own cars. Does anybody ride shotgun?
Everyone in their family has like 8 cars, because no car survives more than 10 minutes, and no one ever seems that bummed out that their car just got destroyed by a tank.
Where do they keep them?
That's another question that you don't ask very much, because they jet set around the world. And you would think, like, hey, we're going to Dubai. Okay, great. I'm going to ship my Corvette there. That's a whole movie in itself, trying to figure out
logistics.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Like, oh, I'd like to join you on my trip, but yeah, I have another 2.5 weeks before it gets out from the Stevedore strike.
I'd much rather watch like a documentary of somebody trying to get their car to Dubai. Like, that seems more interesting to me.
I'm imagining like a cut scene. Like, there's all these scenes of racing and explosions, and then there's just one guy. Yeah. Like the lost member of Fast and the Furious whose car is always in the impound lot.
Yeah, like some guy who's just like trying to find like, you know, like a good deal on shipping.
Yeah.
So, all right, so they're a family. Do they live together?
Not really. No. It's not like they're all in one house. Family is just the code word, the same way that it's the same code word for the Juggalos. It is about 90% crossover between Fast and Furious and Juggalos. And in terms of these are the outcasts of society, they're wearing weird and inappropriate clothing, and they have a bond because no one in the world wants them.
You know, I just say, as a father, I can't think of anything worse than if my kids became Juggalos. Like, it sounds awful to say, but like on the list, if you're like, all right, like porn actors or Juggalos, I'll have to think about it. I'm not going to say I'm going to go, like, my answer might be Juggalos, but, like, I'm not going to give that answer so quickly. I would need to mull it over a little bit.
We were listening to Merle Travis before because it was his birthday this week. He turned 100 years ago. I wanted to say country singer, but we didn't hear him sing.
No, it was a little bluegrassy, though.
Yeah. Yeah, as far as I know, he had his tongue cut out at a young age, so he needs to express himself solely through music.
Or maybe that was actually him singing. He's like a Bobby McFerrin type.
Oh yeah, that could be.
Do you remember our Professor Pearson, one of our
college professors?
Yeah. Yep. She used to like play Bobby McFerrin in class all the time, and like while she would be up there like talking and rambling on about stuff.
So it would be like on the background, or
in the background, she'd be playing Bob McFerrin. But every once in a while, she'd be like, hold on, and like we'd have to like listen, and she'd be like stare intently at this boombox. We would hear is like boop beep beep boop boop beep boop beep boop beep beep boop, and she'd kind of like yeah, right? Isn't that great? You'd have to be like, oh, that was wonderful. That doesn't just sound like somebody doing a bad R2-D2. That's That Bobby McFerrin's wonderful. Yeah,
that's the thing about a musician that you really, really love. Other people are hearing the same music, but they may not have the same love you do. And you don't have a good way of expressing it other than that pointing to a boombox playing Bobby McFerrin saying, isn't that great? And everyone is like, no.
And like, you know, I want to request Don't Worry, Be Happy. Not that I like that song, but at least it was like, oh, there's words.
Yeah.
You know, I could sing along. I could sing along note for note, actually, if you want.
Now, if you were up there in 1995 and you had to play your favorite music.
Wait, we weren't in college in 95.
Oh, I...
2007. Okay.
Sorry about that. Right. So if we were in college in 2007, what would be your music you were pointing at and saying, this is my favorite.
See, my lie got figured out. I don't know music after 1998. That was the last music I know is 1998. Damn it!
That's also when music stopped being good. And by good, I meant music I listened to.
Exactly. I don't know anything there. Most recent album I have, Jim Blossom.
I will defend Jim Blossoms because I attacked them before and I shouldn't have done that.
When did you attack?
Yeah, I had a very, very brief career on MTV. Do you remember this?
Yes. Oh, wait, hold on. Wait, we do the intro. Ahoy, hoy.
Oh, ahoy, hoy.
Okay.
So I wanted to, it was my senior year of college and I wanted to see what I should do with my life. And one of the many options was maybe do something in TV. Not like hosting a TV show, but like being a production assistant, which is much more attainable. So
what a great career. I'm going to be a PA for the rest of my life.
So MTV had a new show before Total Request Live, back when that was a thing, called 12 Angry Viewers.
Okay, I remember this, yes.
Yeah, so they had people come on every week, and they'd play brand new videos, and the jury got to pick if they liked the video or not. At the end, one of the many videos they showed went into regular rotation. And it was good for MTV because they're actually playing videos, which is what everyone always wanted, but it was a program. And at the same time, they're playing videos of stuff that would never be shown otherwise. And we got to pick one of them. And I, for like...
So how'd you get to be a viewer? How'd you get to be one of the angry viewers?
Oh, I just called in. And then they called me back and said, show up in like 2 weeks' time. And I went into a conference room with like 40 other people who were all my age, but all like aspiring actors while I was still in college. And I had long hair back
then. Yeah, right. You don't really have long. It was poofy.
It was poofy and kind of long. And I aspire to a mullet. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I remember just, yeah, like a big like poof of hair.
I was trying to say it wasn't just the guys you would think had long hair that could have long hair. Mm-hmm. But since I've realized, maybe just cut your hair.
So you're like a hippie demographic that they were looking to fulfill.
The producer specifically said, you look like you've just come from a hard day at work. that was so the look they were going for.
I remember back then, all right, man. This is what I remember of you at that age.
Okay.
You often wore a shirt and tie.
Yes.
But they always look very slept in, your clothing. Right? Like, very wrinkled and rumpled. Was that an affectation you were going for?
No. And I would iron these shirts and pants. The thing is, though, I wasn't very good at ironing. And I didn't use starch. So it's like I could only get so far up. It's like the D student, if he studies, can get to a C, but it's not going to get to a B or an A. Mm-hmm. That's the way my sartorial fashion was. I was able to put on a shirt and tie, but I wasn't able to get to the point where the shirt and tie looked like it hadn't been balled up.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. If you take a shirt out of the dryer and hang it, it wouldn't be that wrinkled. But imagine that you crumpled them up. And, like, you know, like, shoved them under your bed, and that's where you stored them.
At a certain point, I realized I can't just keep ironing this shirt because it's not getting any better. I just got to put it on.
But why shirt and tie, then, if that's how you're...
Well, the thing about shirt and tie is no one says it has to be, like, a crisp, new, white shirt and tie. That's the image.
But did you say, I'm going to be shirt and tie guy? Like, or did you go, like, you know, like, was that a decision? Or did you really... Were you shirt and tie guy before college?
No, I wasn't shirt and tie guy before college, and I wasn't shirt and tie guy after college. Mm-hmm. That was just during college when I was really digging into the reporter phase where I thought, well, maybe I can be a reporter because I'll just look like a 51-year-old alcoholic.
Or I get like a fedora with a little press ticket in it.
I didn't go that far.
Well, because there's always like a couple different guys around. Like there's the shirt and tie guy. There's always been like fat guy in shorts guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Tried that once.
You know?
Terrible.
Yeah, there's a guy with, yeah, it's 20 degrees, but I'm fat, so I'll wear shorts. Do you remember those guys that wore like medieval clothing?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was like guys who like dressed like they were at like a Renaissance fair.
There was one guy, and this is going to be dating both of us. You probably know who this guy is. He dressed exclusively in NoFX t-shirts. Like every day was a different NoFX t-shirt.
I don't remember NoFX guy.
Oh. he was a good sized guy. He was like 6'2", about 260.
Mm-hmm. And he had just like a full on wardrobe of
shows, like punk rock shows that he had seen.
Yeah, there's that. There's always like, the Dashiki White guy.
Yeah.
You know, all those dudes.
I know you think the Dashiki White guy exists.
He was real. I know you deny him, but he was real.
So we can pivot from our college talk to to something going on in the world of 1917. 1917 was a founding of the Sigma Alpha Rho fraternity. Mm-hmm. This is the first Jewish fraternity, but my Hawaiian research assistant tells me that this is the first continuous, did I get it right that time? Okay, the first continuous Jewish community. I think I got it wrong the fourth time when I was... Okay. Anyways, that meant that it wasn't the very first one, but it's the first one that's still going on now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm used to college fraternities, but this was a high school fraternity, and I don't know how that works.
No, I don't. I've never heard of that.
No, because college fraternities were aware of that they have houses and pledging and sometimes hazing, and there's bigs and littles and paddles and all that. And people who aren't in it will occasionally make the snarky joke about buying your friends. But that never struck me as right. Because it's like the membership fee is like $130. That's a pretty small price to like buy 19 friends.
One of my closest friends was actually a president of this fraternity. Most people didn't pay their dues. So I don't even know how much buying went on. Most of his job as president was to harass 30 guys to pay dues, and only 6 of them would pay.
One of my roommates was in a frat, and he would bring up, like, yeah, I got these 6 guys who are my brothers, and there's other 2 guys or 3 guys who they're, like, honorary brothers, which basically meant, like they just didn't, they didn't pledge the fraternity, they didn't go through the process, they just decided to start hanging out.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize you could do that.
No, I mean, I had friends in fraternities, I'd hang around the frat house, but no, I didn't have to, you know,
officially join up.
Yeah, you know, I didn't have to wear like a shirt or anything like that. You know?
Yeah. So Sigma Alpha Rho, the first Jewish fraternity, is a high school fraternity, and I think it's like an honor fraternity, something like Phi Beta Kappa. Did you know Cindy was a Phi Beta Kappa when she was in college?
Well, that's the they're smart, right?
Yeah, that's the smart. You need to have a very high grade.
I wasn't asked.
So high, I don't even know what it is because I wasn't asked either.
I don't think I know anybody, any other Phi Beta Kappas.
No.
What does it get her? Does she like ever run into other Phi Beta Kappas on the street? And, like,
every once in a while, there'll be a newsletter that shows up. But I don't...
Is that newsletter really just asking for money?
It's mostly asking for money, yeah. Yeah, just like most every college thing you get. It's either asking for money or they're pivoting to asking for money.
So now you've mentioned before, you and your wife work together, right?
Yeah.
So, like, she has this high GPA, obviously mm-hmm. worked hard, and she winds up with the same shitty job you have.
Well, we're at the same company.
Oh, okay. And, yeah,
I have nothing bad to say about my job. However, due to the social constraints of where I work, I feel like I'm not allowed to say what it is I actually do.
No.
No. It was weird societal contracts that have changed over the years where I feel like I can't mention it because it may make them look bad or make me look bad. I think within 5 years, no one will mention in social media where they work just because there's either going to be blowback for you against the company or the company for you.
I imagine at some point or another, all of us will be in a situation where people are demanding we be fired. We're gonna come full circle. And it's gonna be like a rite of passage that we all go through at some point where we will be receiving horrible hate mail and people will be demanding that not only that we be fired, but that we never get to work ever again.
In the future, you'll be burned in effigy every 15 minutes.
Yeah. No, maybe not burned in effigy, because that's like old school. Like, yeah. You know, people, that's like effort, you know, like tweeting at, you know, or tweeting, demanding somebody be, all right, well, I can't talk about that. Never mind. I was going to tell a story involving my wife's job. I'm like, oh, wait, no, she can get a job. Yeah.
See, we're all already aware that we shouldn't be talking about where we work or what we do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And especially really should be giving up other people on that. Why didn't mention where I work?
Yeah.
Honey, I just said where you work.
I didn't jump over the bus. I threw you under it. I'm fine. And I know you're worrying about me. So I looked to see who the most famous alumni are for Sigma Alpha Rho. I could only find one.
Okay.
Tony Kornheiser.
Oh, okay. I like him.
You do?
I love Tony Kornheiser.
Okay.
I'm a fan.
I don't watch much like sports commentary, so I don't know the difference between Tony Kornheiser and Skip Bayless. I mix them up
Skip
in my head.
Skip Bayless is awful. No, yes. don't confuse those two. That's not right. Stop that.
I'm getting my unsightly white guys mixed up.
Are you, hold on, are you sincere that you mix those two up?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Because Bayless Skip Bayless is awful and like an awful person. Tony Kornheiser is warm and welcoming.
Okay, well I'm glad
with an intellect.
Okay, good. And he's making good calls. He's not just saying someone won because they wanted it more.
No, he has something to say. He has something to say. He's a thoughtful man.
Okay, good.
I enjoy him and Wilbon together. Look, you know when they tell you, like, all right, who are the three people that you want to have, like, dinner with, like, anyone in history?
Uh-huh.
He and Michael Wilbon, 2 out of 3.
Wow.
Almost, yes.
You just want to be on PTI.
Maybe that's it.
Our guest tonight on PTI, a comedian, Vinny Nariello, and for some reason, Bobby the Brain Heenan, back from the dead. It's your dream dinner party.
Exactly, yes. You know, a dream dinner party may turn into a dream orgy. I don't know. It doesn't have to stop.
Our main story this week is about the birth of Joseph Kors.
Mm-hmm.
And because of this, I felt like we needed to sample the Kors good. So I have Kors beer for us.
Should I go get it?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it's in the fridge. The store down the street, they...
You know, your fridge was open.
It was open?
Your fridge was open. Hmm. Yeah. Oh, man. All this food going bad.
We're having an issue where it doesn't seal correctly.
Oh, nice. Got the big...
Yeah, the big cans.
Big cans here.
So I bought one regular Coors and one Coors Light, and these are the double-sized cans
because Let's see.
They don't right. sell the...
What do you want? Do you want light beer or regular beer?
I'm going to try the regular.
Okay.
I've had
The banquet beer?
Yeah, are you allowed to have it at banquets? Banquet is such an unusual word. Like, I know banquet rooms are a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Should we synchronize?
We didn't. Mm. Cheers.
Oh, cheers.
You know, clicking cans together doesn't...
Yeah, that sounded awful. Yeah. Can we make it sound better?
No.
No, it still sounds bad.
Doesn't sound like a celebration of any kind, actually. Mm. Oh, man, I drink Coors Light, I feel like such a grandpa. People, I feel like it's when I was a kid. I think people like Coors was beer. Really, it was like a big beer. But now I feel like it's maligned. People don't like Coors anymore. They don't like the style of beer. It's all about like the microbrews now, heavy alcohol.
I read a book in the 1960s. Oh, it was written in the 1960s called Centennial, which was about a Colorado town. James Michener wrote it. It's one of those giant 1,000-page books.
Mm-hmm.
And it had an unusual conceit, which was that there was a historian that was paid to go to this town to find the history of it, and he said that nothing ever happened in this town, but then he was forced to do it anyways, and the 1,000-page book is then his result. And he makes a point of talking about eating Mexican food in this Colorado town from the Mexican immigrants and washing it down with Coors beer.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about Coors beer the way, like, an archaeologist would talk about a clay pot. And I thought it was fascinating because at the time, Coors wasn't a national brand.
Yeah.
It was still just a Western brand in the Rockies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, to tie it all back, where Cannonball Run comes from, right?
What? The Rockies?
What were they doing in the first Cannonball Run?
They were going from... cross country.
Yes, but why were they going cross country? You don't know this? You say you're a Burt fan, you don't know why they were driving cross country in Cannonball Run?
No.
Oh, I'm getting it mixed up. Smokey and the Bandit. it's Smokey and the Bandit.
Yes.
That they were driving cross country to bring Coors beer.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I mean, it is where beer is very regional. So, you know, where we went to college, bringing it back to Yingling was very big. In that Pennsylvania, South Jersey area, but we didn't have it up here.
Right.
And I remember when it came up here, I got very excited.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're Yingling. And then I drink, I'm like, oh, I don't think I like it that much. What was I so excited about?
So much of the fun of unusual beers is the quest. Like, this isn't available in my town. This may not be available ever again. Well, I got to have it now.
Do you ever feel like that when you're like on like a trip to another part of the country and there's like a fast food place that you normally don't get?
Oh, yeah.
Russell, I'm
so excited.
Oh, my God. A Jack in the Box. how exciting.
It's not really being in the South unless you see a Waffle House.
Yeah.
That's proof that you're in the South.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one is in Delaware, if you're going down Route 9.
I know that Pennsylvania has a few Waffle Houses as well.
Yeah. Pennsylvania also has Sheetz,
mm-hmm.
which I'm not as excited about anymore since I moved here and there's a Quick Check nearby. And it's now just a thing that you can get any sort of sandwich you want made.
Mm-hmm.
But that used to be a thing that was only at Sheetz.
Oh, yeah, just Wawa same idea, you know.
Yeah, but I went nuts the first time I saw a Sheetz where I could order anything I wanted. It's like, okay, I want a foot-long sandwich with lots of chicken strips and this weird sort of topping and three types of cheeses. And, yeah, that's it.
You know, one of my dreams in life, a bucket list, I'd like to have a sandwich named after me.
Well, what about the fat sandwiches?
That's different because they're already made, the fat sandwiches, and you got to eat a bunch. And then if you eat like a certain amount, that becomes your sandwich. I'm talking about I want to create a sandwich and have it, but it becomes not just offered at one place and named after me, but it becomes something that like everybody knows.
You want to be the next Reuben.
The Reuben, yes. Which I imagine was invented by Reuben Kincaid from the Partridge Family.
I thought it was a Reuben Studdard from American Idol Season 2. That's a guy that looks like he can put away a couple sandwiches.
Yes, yeah. So, I'd like to, or like doing you know, like an Arnold Palmer kind of thing, where like Arnold Palmer's still one of the top earning celebrities, even in death.
Wow, and that's just because of the half and half.
Yeah, the Arnold Palmer drink, yeah. I'm going to create a sandwich or something like that where it's named after me, and after I'm dead, people are still ordering a Vinny Nardiello.
You would go with the full name, not just a Vinny?
No, there's probably some other Vinny who may want to jump on that. I don't want that guy getting credit. Yeah.
Now, would you want to just go with Nardiello? Because that's a more distinct last name.
Yeah, but then I may have some, like, what... I don't want any of my relatives who did not work for the sandwich to be getting credit and jumping on board. I don't want my Uncle Lou getting credit that he doesn't deserve.
Now, your father is also has the same name as you. So would you be okay with him getting credit?
Hmm.
Or let me make it an even more devious question. What if your father had a sandwich named after him?
Oh, no.
Would you take credit for your father's sandwich?
No, I wouldn't do it. In fact, I would make it a point to never eat a Vinny Nardiello sandwich.
Okay, yet another devil's bargain. Katz's Deli says, we're going to name the Vinny Nardiello after you. Yeah. But just like in the Curb Your Enthusiasm episode, it's a gross sandwich. Mm-hmm. It's a disgusting sandwich that you would never eat and you would never want anything to do with. But it bears your name.
See, I want to be part of the creation process.
Okay.
It's not enough to be honored. I wanted to be honored and also be like, you know, a consultant on.
So what would be on the Vinny Nardiello sandwich?
I have to think about this. No, I can't say it. I know. I know what's on my sandwich.
Okay.
However.
Wait, are you, you don't, you, do you not want to say it just in case someone's listening and just makes the sandwich and names it after someone else?
Yeah. is that the sum of all fears for
Okay, we're gonna come up with a disgusting sandwich.
No, just as
a placeholder.
I've thought about what is in my sandwich, right? Okay, so it's on like a nice Italian roll. Uh-huh. I can't believe I'm talking about this. It's like I'm almost ashamed that I've thought about it. That's all right. So on the bottom of the roll, all right, you say you have some nice prosciutto, imported prosciutto.
Yeah.
All right. A fairly thick layer of it, actually. Okay. Then, and here's where it gets a little special. Uh-huh. All right. You throw ricotta. I mean, most people don't think of ricotta being that good on a sandwich. I don't know why not. Why not put it on? So then you have the layer of ricotta, okay?
Uh-huh.
Then you take some provolone.
Ooh.
Melt provolone on top. So it's warm. It's a little warm. Melt provolone on top. And then on top of the provolone, long hot peppers roasted.
This does sound like a delicious sandwich.
Yeah, right?
Have you ever had this sandwich?
I may have played around a little bit in my kitchen.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds wonderful. Mm-hmm. Now, what I was going to suggest before you opened the safe with the recipe is by coming up with a fake sandwich, like a throwaway sandwich of just the most disgusting stuff you could put on together.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, like two different types of coleslaw and then honey and capers. And that's their sandwich. And of course, that's not your actual sandwich.
No.
No. But that's just to throw the wolves off the scent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so to get people like, oh, no, that's the Vinnie Nardiello sandwich. Go, yeah. Oh, someone's going to steal my sandwich. Or maybe there's like an enterprising, sandwich guy out there who's going to like jump on this and contact me.
And then he will name it after you, and this is how you get your sandwich.
Yeah.
The fact that you were open about the sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
Is it an open-faced sandwich?
No.
No. Okay. No. You're not that open.
What if I get screwed up? All right, here's the thing. My dream, like I said, is to have a sandwich everywhere. But what if somebody else takes it? They name it after me,
mm-hmm.
but they basically steal it from me. Oh. And now I... And I
so many devil's bargain
and questions makes, here. And they make a ton of money on my sandwich. And I'm happy. Look, people know my name.
You'd be like the next McDonald
brother. That's what I was thinking. I'd be like one of the McDonald brothers. Like.
Because Michael Keaton came and he stole your restaurant out from under you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, yes, my name is on it. People think of McDonald's, but, you know, it's not them. And maybe, like I'd be like, oh, man, I don't like that they stole it. I don't like what they're doing with it. Maybe they're not bringing the proper quality. Maybe they start using domestic prosciutto instead of imported. Or they don't properly roast the peppers. Or they get, you know, some kind of, I don't know, inferior bread that isn't made with the right water.
Yeah.
You know, so then I go and I try to create my own sandwich, but I can't name it the Vinnie Nardiello because there's already another Vinnie Nardiello's sandwich out there, and I have to, like, come up with a whole other name for my sandwich.
I'm going to just take a wild, wild shot in the dark that you're maybe hungry right now. would you like something between two pieces of bread, perhaps?
I might stop at the Quick Trip down the street. I'm like, I can't lie.
So, we have Coors and the Coors related talking all about sandwiches because it was the birthday of Joseph Coors. He was born on November 12th, 1917. His father was Adolf Coors II. Mm-hmm. His siblings include Adolf Coors III and William Coors. He is going to take over the Coors.
I imagine there have been no other Adolf Coors after that one, though.
No, no. Adolf is one of those names that around 1941, there's just a hard stop on them.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was a name around the world, like Adolphus and Alphonse.
Mm-hmm.
There were names everywhere. It was a popular name, but then just one Hitler. All you need is one Hitler, and they all go away. I have never had Coors beer before.
Really?
I've had Coors Light, but I've never had regular Coors.
Mm-hmm.
In college, I didn't even know it existed. I assumed that Coors had moved on and done nothing.
Coors Light's more popular than Coors.
Yeah, it's way more popular. The book I read about Coors, well, it was 1,000 pages long, and they didn't mention Coors very much, but it's still a notable amount. Talked about how like clean and smooth it was.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing with Coors, and I think it's the thing that kind of gets people, you know, they make fun of it, is it doesn't really have a ton going on.
No.
It's like a suggestion of beer.
Yeah.
But where it is nice is if it's a hot day, you could be outside and just like, drink them like water one after another.
Right. No one wants to sit down on a hot day and pound five IPAs.
No.
Ugh.
No. So, yeah, it's a refreshing beer on a hot day.
Yeah.
You know?
I read a Mary Roach book where she was talking to like a flavor scientist or someone whose job is to like literally sniff and taste things and describe the bouquet of them all. And she went to lunch with this like super taster, and the super taster ordered a Budweiser
mm-hmm.
at a bar with like, you know, 30 or 40 craft beers. And Mary Roach was just kind of like shocked and appalled for the same reasons that everyone else.
I get it, yeah.
Yeah, and she said, like, what Budweiser's good at is making beer that tastes like beer and has no other tastes.
Mm-hmm.
You can talk about the Beechwood Age stuff, but that tastes like nothing.
Yeah, so if you're eating something, it doesn't interfere with all the things that you're
right. You're and for someone who's a super taster...
Yeah, you don't want to taste every little thing in there.
No, you sometimes you just want a piece of bread,
mm-hmm.
and that's what it is. It's just plain old liquid bread. And it's the same every single time.
Maybe that's what they should do. Maybe they should just, like, you know, build Budweiser and Coors is like, you know, this won't overpower the rest of your food. Yeah. It pairs really good with something that's actually flavorful.
Yeah.
Or, you know, get drunk on a hot day.
Maybe that's what they already do. They're calling Coors the banquet beer. So when you're at a banquet, you have a lot of heavy food with strong flavors. So you don't want a drink that also has strong flavors also.
Yeah. Maybe that's it. I don't know. I've switched my beer drinking out because I can't drink a lot anymore. I get bloated. I think one of the things that happens when you get older is that you fill up faster.
Okay.
Especially with beer. So I try to drink stuff that has like very high alcohol. So I don't have to drink three beers. I have to drink one beer.
Okay.
So I try to drink something that has like 9 or 10% alcohol in it. So I won, and then I'm drunk.
You know, I never thought about that, but maybe that's why when you think of like older men, you think of scotch. You don't think of them drinking beers that much.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
You know, because they want to get drunk and beer bloats them.
Joseph Coors ran Coors Light for Coors Light. He ran Coors, a company, and brought around Coors Light. He was known in the 70s and 80s for being very politically conservative. His brother made a joke that he was to the right of Attila the Hun, which is, I think, where the joke came from. Mm-hmm. Because I've heard that joke mentioned a whole lot. His father brought unions to the Coors Brewing Company, but the son, Joseph Coors, who we're talking about, got rid of the unions to the point where the AFL-CIO had a 10-year boycott. If you were in that union for 10 years, you were discouraged from ever buying Coors.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm a union guy and I'm a little disgusted right now.
You're a little disgusted with yourself?
I don't like this.
Did you ever go to... You've traveled overseas a lot more than I have. But when I was in England, I noticed they only had one national beer. Mm-hmm. And everywhere else you went, it was all local beers. So if you went to Manchester, they had a whole bunch of beers that were available in every bar. But if you went up,
they were like the Manchester beers,
right? But if you went to Birmingham, there's almost no overlap.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah. The only overlap we saw on a regular basis was Strongbow, which was apple cider. Mm-hmm. So the cider was the same everywhere, but all the other beers were distinct. And even then, there was like a hierarchy. There was like, you know, the beers you saw everywhere that were like the Coors equivalents. And then there were the microbrews. And then there were like the ones that were in some of the pubs, but not all of the pubs. And I can't remember the one true national English beer that was everywhere. Perhaps because
we should help you on this.
Yeah, perhaps I've gotten a little too far in this 24-ounce can of Coors for me to remember it.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen you drunk.
I've never really been drunk, although there was one time, and it was Coors Light. I had my family over when I was living in Connecticut, and it was on a Saturday night, and then they all left. On Sunday morning, there was like one beer left, and I don't think I had any beers the day before, but I had breakfast early, and then for some reason, I skipped lunch, and then around 3 o'clock, I decided, I'm going to drink a beer and watch this football game. And I had nothing to eat since, like, you know, 7:30 in the morning. And I drank 12 ounces of Coors Light and, like, got very sick. Not, like, throw-up sick. Just, like, oh, my head. I have such a terrible headache. I don't know if that's being drunk or did I just skip right to hungover?
I think you were, like, dehydrated or something.
It could also be dehydrated, but I'm sure I wasn't drinking much water back then. I need to drink a lot of water now. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Have you ever seen me drunk?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not a hard accomplishment. Especially, we were roommates for a year.
That's true. Yeah.
We need to talk about deaths right now.
Okay.
We need to say goodbye to Auguste Rodin. We talked about him earlier this year because he got married.
Yes.
Yeah, he got married in January. And
did I make a joke about him fighting Godzilla?
No, now you can.
Well, I kind of gave it away. Never mind. Yeah. I didn't want to repeat a joke if I did earlier, but, you know.
Yeah. He got married at the age of 76. His wife died 2 weeks after he got married. But they'd been together for 53 years. Now, I suspect they got married as like...
going away present kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, as proof. Alan Rickman did the same thing. he had been with the same woman for like 25 or 30 years, like a huge amount of time, and they were never married because they didn't believe in marriage. But when he found out he was about to die, that he had an incurable cancer, he married her because he realized just the way the laws of inheritance work, it's just so much easier to say, this is my wife, she gets all my stuff, mm-hmm. as opposed to, this is my live-in girlfriend, and you know, I'll just throw her on the trash heap. I found out that after he died, in his will, they said to put a cast of the thinker on his tombstone. And it's there now. If you visit his grave in Paris or wherever he's buried, you can see a smaller version of the thinker. Huh. And I think that's why the thinker is famous.
From being on the tombstone.
Yes. Yeah, I've always wondered about this, why certain pieces of art get picked to be famous and others don't. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a Da Vinci painting that sold for $450 million this week, and I'd never seen it before. It wasn't something that showed up as, like, here's a great Da Vinci painting. But you see the Mona Lisa all the time.
Yeah.
That's because the Mona Lisa was on display in Louis the Sun King's room in Versailles. And Versailles was open to the public, so all the French noblemen and the regular schmucks wandered around for 50 years and they saw, oh, this is the painting that the Sun King thought was the very best painting in the world because mm-hmm. he hung it up in his room. So because of that, the painting got famous more so
than all the other things of the day, yes.
Right. And it's not saying the painting is bad, it's just that there's lots of good paintings.
Yeah, why is it better than...
Right. Why is it better than everything else?
Yeah, I've seen the Mona Lisa. It's a little underwhelming, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Like, your main thought when you see the Mona Lisa isn't what a great painting is. It's like, well, hey, welcome. Look at the Mona Lisa.
Yeah. My thought, because I saw it with, like 400 people between me and it, is I'm never getting closer to this. If I waited, like, 10 minutes, I could get a couple of feet closer. Mm-hmm. But I can see it okay. I'm not going to, like... notice anything better if I get closer.
You go and pull up your phone and look at it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so many better ways of watching it. Just pull up, buy a $6 portrait and it's going to look better.
I'm sure. You just like charge your way to the front. Just elbow them. Elbow people out of the way. Out of the way, frog.
Also, dying this week, 100 years ago today, is Emil Durkheim. He was one of the founders of sociology. And he was nicknamed Le Suicide. Mm-hmm. Strangely, or I guess not strangely, but he didn't die from a suicide. He died from a stroke.
Yeah, well, that'd be ironic, right?
Yeah. But what he studied, one of the things he studied was suicides and how it was treated differently in the different cultures of the world, especially in the different sects of Christianity. And so that's one of the ways that he founded sociology, which took some stuff from religion, some stuff from anthropology, and some stuff from psychology to figure out like the science of how we act as a people and why we act. Are you ready for the quiz this week?
I'm ready. Hold on. Okay. Let me take another swig of beer.
We'll do it drunk.
All right. Are you okay?
Yeah.
You all right?
Yeah.
Am I going to get to see you drunk for the first time in my life?
I don't think so.
Oh.
But I'm probably... Oh. I'm using the trackpad for the wrong computer. And I couldn't figure out why it wasn't moving over to that computer.
Well, maybe you were drunk.
Maybe I am.
Hold on. All right.
Should I do jumping jacks? What's the way of telling?
Do the alphabet backwards.
Should I be a smartass and just do the alphabet backwards?
No, really. I was thinking.
Okay. Z, Y, X, W... you should have asked me to do this sober, and then
you had
a baseline. Yeah. Yeah.
I think you might be a little bit drunk. Hold on. Take your finger, put it to your nose.
Okay.
All right, raise it up. All right, close your eyes.
Wait, I need to do it with my eyes closed?
I think so.
Okay. Okay, I'm closing my eyes, and I'll do it with my other hand. There, hit my nose.
All right, you did.
Yeah, I think I'm fine.
All right.
I mean, I'm very paranoid about losing any.
I got really excited that maybe I was going to see you drunk.
Yeah, and I don't think I'd want to drive right now, but at the same time, I think I'd be fine. If you had a breathalyzer test, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be testing anything. Yeah,
you've had like three sips of this beer.
Yeah, I haven't had very much of the beer. Yeah, you're doing more than pacing me. Okay, so our quiz this week is about the animals of 1917.
Okay.
And according to science, this is when the animals were described. That was, I like that way of splitting the difference, because they weren't discovered, because they've been around.
Yeah, people have seen these
animals. Yeah, people have seen them. They just, like, a scientist decided to come up with a name for it. Okay.
So you're going to describe it as, guess what the animal is?
It'll be easier than that.
Okay.
Okay. There were 29 species of Turbonilla that were discovered in 1917. What is a Turbonilla?
All right. Let's see. Turbo is fast.
Yes.
All right. So.
And have you seen a movie, like, with Turbo in the name about a fast animal?
Yes. It was a snail.
Yes. Turbo means snail.
Mm-hmm.
That was something I didn't know until I was putting this quiz together, that there is, like an etymology joke in the title of the racing snail movie Turbo.
Mm-hmm.
I just assumed that they picked a fast name for a slow animal.
Yeah.
Do you know sea snails were what Stephen Jay Gould studied, the evolutionary biologist? That was his thing. He studied on snails in the Bahamas, which meant that every couple of years he took a trip to the Bahamas for a couple of weeks just to, like, literally stand on the beach and count snails.
Yeah. You know, I really mainly know him from his guest appearance on The Simpsons.
On The Simpsons, yeah. Yeah, I've seen him being interviewed, and his first statement is, "Don't ask me anything about The Simpsons."
Oh, what an asshole.
But I think most anyone who's been on The Simpsons has the same caveat, because there's not much of a story behind it, other than they asked me to be on, and I went to a booth with no one else, and they gave me one piece of paper, and I read my three lines. And that's the entirety of my story. And then I've spent the next 12 years telling that story over and over to a disappointed audience. So maybe the reason why he said, "I don't want to talk about it."
He had nothing much to say.
He had nothing much to say. On any other topic, he had something more to say. Okay, next animal. The Korat Supple Skink was classified in 1917 in Thailand. What is a skink?
I'm thinking like
got choices for you.
I'm pretty sure it's like a small skunk.
You would
think. A small skunk's a skink.
That was one of the choices. A small skunk, a lizard, or a monkey? And the answer was lizard.
Oh.
A skink is a lizard. Also discovered in 1917 is the Japanese short-nosed spur dog. It's not a dog.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
Let's see. I'm going with like a prairie dog.
It's a shark.
Oh.
If it was found in Japan, it's probably not a prairie dog. Because it's something that needs to be around the island.
Well, good point, yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's like, you know, like the those little sand sharks, they call them dogfish.
Yeah.
You know, they make like a barking sound. Someone has the same kind of idea, yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm getting texts up the yin yang again. I was getting these like a week or two ago.
Is everything okay? Are you all right?
Is this more stuff about the car? Yes, it's more stuff about the car. It takes 2 weeks to tow a car in my family. Okay. A new species of armored sea robin was found in 1917. What is an armored sea robin?
It's a fish.
Yes, it is a fish.
Well, they're around here in Jersey. There's a lot of sea robins.
Oh, I had never heard of this.
No, before. If you ever go out for any kind of like fluke or even bottom fishing, you'll catch a lot of sea robins.
Oh,
They're kind of like a garbage fish, but apparently, if you cook them right, they taste like scallop.
Oh,
okay. I've never cooked them though. I don't know. I think
okay, that's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
The southern mountain yellow-legged frog of California was
a frog.
Plentiful in 1917. Correct, it is a frog.
Yeah.
Is it now borderline endangered? Is it now endangered or is it now extinct?
Extinct.
No. Luckily, it is borderline endangered.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. So it's one of those animals that they're just talking about putting on the endangered species list because they can't find many of them. And the ones that do probably have like 8 legs because that's what... Frogs are like the canaries in the coal mine for pollution, and I guess they're all getting all weirded out. The Midkiff Seductive, Midkiff Seductive is not an actual breed of animal. It's a specific name. The Midkiff Seductive.
There's no way you're saying this right. There's no way this is happening.
It's the name of a dog.
All right.
Midkiff Seductive was born in 1917 and became the winner of the 1921 Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show. It was named the Best in Show. What breed was the Midkiff Seductive? To give you a hint.
A poodle.
Nope. It was a Cocker Spaniel. The year before, the winner was a Wire Fur Terrier. The year after was an Airedale Terrier. So the Airedale, I believe, is much bigger. And the Cocker
Spaniel. So this was described, like, and it won Westminster in the same year?
No, it was born in 1917, and 4 years later it won Westminster.
Well, that's a fast rise to you know, being the preeminent dog.
Yeah, in just 4 years' time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some people can't even finish college in that time, and this person is a world champion.
Yeah.
And a dog.
Got named, then a champ.
Okay, which of these is not a real 1917 bird? And I'm going to give you a hint. They're all real. And each name is better than the one before. Okay. Okay. Burlepsch Canastopro, the Crested Shell Duck, the Inca Flycatcher, the Jaw River Scrub Warbler, the Least Poor Will, the Masker Fruit Eater, the Sapphire-Bellied Hummingbird, the Tepuli Foliage Gleaner, or the White-Winged Warbler. Those are all real birds.
Yes. Have you ever done any bird watching?
No. I read a whole book about it.
I'm not surprised.
It's because there was a Steve Martin movie. Do you remember the Steve Martin movie about bird watching?
No.
It was called The Big Year. And the idea was bird watchers take 1 year and they try to see as many birds as they can in the 50 states.
Mm-hmm.
But there's only like 350 birds in the United States that you can see. So what you're really trying to get are like the chase birds, like the birds from South America that get blown up on a freak storm and have no reason but are in Galveston, Texas for 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
So it just becomes the contest of how many like last-minute flights to Galveston, Texas you can get on.
So this was the book that the movie was based on.
This is the book the movie was based on. And it took place before 9/11, when at 1 o'clock you could decide, I'm going to go buy a ticket and be on a 2 o'clock airplane, which you can't do nowadays because of safety concerns. So for that reason alone, there are no more big years. And there was also like 3 or 4 freak storms, which were blowing in birds from all over the
those
world.
Those terrorists really hit us where it hurts on that one. Huh?
Yeah, the bird watching community.
Wouldn't it be like amazing if that was like the actual reason behind 9/11? Like, we're thinking it has all this to do with, like, you know, bases in Saudi Arabia and you know, spreading radical Islam. No, they really just hate bird watchers.
Yeah, they really wanted to inconvenience someone so that this one guy's record will never be broken. His record was like 729.
Wow.
So it's like for every one bird he saw, he also saw a freak bird that has no point existing on this continent. Two more questions and we're done. Hague's tucco-tucco was first described in 1917. What the hell is a tucco-tucco?
It's also a bird, like a toucan.
Close. By close, I mean geographically, it's probably close to...
A monkey.
Nope. It's like a rat thing. I found a list of all of the mammals that were classified in 1917, and none of them are good. It's all rats and bats and mice. It's all just, like, little guys. There was one bush baby. Other than that, it's just all rodents. So it's like these things have been around forever, and it was just cats were killing them, and no one cared. But someone decided to give them a name. Final question. The Yana Losi salamander was discovered in 1917. It can be found in what part of the world? The Yana Losi salamander.
Let's see. All right. Lassi is an Indian drink.
Yes.
So it's in India.
Good, good guess. And totally wrong. It's in Appalachia.
No.
Yana Losi was the name of a river in like Kentucky or somewhere. And that is the end of this week for 100 Years Ago Today. Join us next week when, as promised last week as well, we will finally be talking about Ukraine. Maybe every single week we can talk about how next week we'll be talking about Ukraine.
I don't think anyone's disappointed.
Well, until next time, ahoy hoy.
Ahoy hoy.